Hi, Thomas. Mr. G calling from WHUS.
How you doing?
I'm doing all right. How are you?
Very well, thanks.
You know, the reason for the call is I noticed you're going to be stepping around our ways at the Iron Horse Cafe on September the 27th, fastly approaching.
Yeah.
And now you're coming around with something called the Soul Inhabitant Tour. Is that like the one-man show?
That's right. It's a one-man show that I've done a few times this year already.
Mm-hmm.
And basically what it consists of is myself and a bunch of vintage gear, oscilloscopes and synthesizers and vintage field equipment that I've bought off eBay and gutted the electronics and converted so I can get it to play MIDI on my computer. And what you'll see is me building up songs track by track and then jamming and singing over the top. And all of this is projected on a big screen. I wear a little head-mounted security camera that was actually designed for the U.S. military to do synchronized building entries in the Gulf.
And, wow.
I wear one of those on my head, and so you see my point of view on the keyboards projected on a large screen behind me and mixed live by a VJ.
Wow. That sounds like a good time.
People find it fascinating to see tracks being built up piece by piece.
Yeah. I think I might be one of those people that would find that very fascinating. So I certainly hope to catch that act. That was very interesting. So you've been gutting a bunch of equipment. That's been sort of your hobby for a long time now.
Well, I've always been a tinkerer.
Yeah.
And I'm very dangerous with a soldering iron. these days you can pick up the most incredible vintage pieces on eBay from U.S. Navy and the Royal Navy and Air Force and so on. And these are these amazing boxes with giant knobs and dials that they kind of look so menacing that if a bomber ran out of bombs, you could drop these on the enemy instead.
I think that's what... No, never mind. Now, I know you started out basically as a kid, like most of us male kids, tinkering and fixing and breaking and fixing and things like that. And then one day, I bet it wasn't really overnight, but... how did it go from being you were a tinkerer, and the next thing you know, we know your name?
Well, yeah, that's a very good question. Well, I mean, I taught myself keyboards, and I always had a very good musical ear, but I wasn't really into music lessons.
Mm-hmm.
So I started playing synthesizer when I was like 14 or 15. I built my first one from a kit. It's called Transcendent 2000. And it's very big and bulky and always going wrong. And I've always sort of favored the bleeding edge of music technology. And very often, these machines don't do exactly what I wanted them to do, so I get in touch with the manufacturers and give them some ideas about how to evolve it, which sometimes they listen to.
Yeah.
And I started playing keyboards in a number of new wave bands and sort of, early art school type bands. And toured the States with Lena Lovitch, and I wrote a song for her called New Toy, which was something of a college hit here.
Mm-hmm.
And that aroused some interest in the industry in my solo work, and I was able to get a former label of my own, Venice in Peril, which was distributed by one of the majors. And that gave me the funding to do my first album, which included She Blinded Me With Science.
Mm. A very fun song.
I was very fortunate that it coincided with the arrival of MTV, because I hadn't been getting much radio play. But when the video hit MTV, at probably MTV's most influential period, it opened a lot of doors for me.
Yeah, and rightly so, because I think you're a good role model for the tinkerers of the world. Because, well, this day and age, if you need to have a trade, a hobby, something that no one else has. And if you can fix what's broken, especially with computers and technology these days, and then take it a step further and maybe enhance whatever the product is, you're a valuable asset.
Well, the kind of enhancements that I do might tend to void your warranty, so be careful.
Yeah, well, but what you're doing with it is extremely innovative, and I appreciate that. And that's part of the reason I wanted, to quickly reach out to you as well and try to get a few more ears to the concert, because I believe this is something that, or the show, that not only do you have to listen to, but you need to see it as well.
Well, I think that's right. It's not hard for me to fill clubs with hardcore fans that that knew my music from the first time around. But I guess the challenge really is with, you know, new fans, to get people interested and to have them understand that, you know, I'm not just doing this as some sort of nostalgia trip, that the music that I'm doing is still pertinent today. And, you know, I mean, I'm fortunate in that a lot of contemporary artists tend to sort of cite me as an influence. And so hopefully for the younger crowd, they'll find something relevant in the music that I'm making now.
Yeah, and that's the kind of, a little bit of the push I wanted to try to give was to the, you know, the college kids are just back on campus this week. And I think airing this interview as well as posting it up on the website might get a few more folks to go up and take a chance. It's all about, you know, it's a risky business being out there going live. And so you are touring now. And you just said you're not just doing a nostalgic type of tour, so you're putting out some new music as well?
I think by the time I get to the Iron Horse, I should be including some new songs.
Cool.
In my repertoire. You know, I've been writing over the years, but many people assumed that I was sort of, you know, on a beach somewhere, or were still driving taxi cabs in Rio de Janeiro with the bass player from The Knack.
Oh, that's, yeah, I heard that one on the internet, yeah.
All so, these years, but actually I've been very busy, and I've been in Silicon Valley working as an entrepreneur, and I've been busy with a company that I founded over 10 years ago called Beatnik, which is now actually the premier ringtone technology company in the world. Over two-thirds of the world's cell phones have Beatnik's technology in it, which is what makes them ring and mix the sound sources, and that's quite a lot of cell phones.
So you're associated with them?
Well, I founded the company, and I'm the largest single shareholder, and I'm on the board of directors. And
nice.
We make the ringtone technology that's in all Nokia, Motorola, Sony Ericsson, Panasonic, etc., Samsung phones.
Good for you. That's a booming industry, and it seems to like it's going to keep on going.
Yeah, well, hopefully we're getting past the sort of bleepy ringtone era, and what Beatnik now does in the phone is it mixes various sound sources, you know, your MP3 files and the sound from your video clips, as well as the, you know, live conversations and your ringtones.
Nice. Pretty soon it's going to be able to display your thoughts vocally. That might be trouble.
Definitely.
Yeah, that might, oh boy, I'd be getting slapped. My face would be getting slapped more often than it is. Why now to come back then?
Well, Beatnik finally got to a point where they could run better without me. You know, now it's a mature business. They need to focus on the bottom line, and they don't need any sort of visionary ideas. And then also, I just think this is a fabulous time for the music world. Maybe not for the industry in the conventional sense. The labels are certainly struggling. But it's a great time for music fans and for musicians. Because, you know, when I compare today with when I started out, you know, today I'm sitting here in my garden shed looking out over the Pacific, and there are migrating whales passing, and I'm editing, you know, a song that is master quality and is going to go out to millions of people just by hitting a button. In the old days, I used to have to first impress the record company A&R guy and the radio promotion guy, and so it went on. And so there's a much closer relationship now between myself and my fans. And having released the music, within a few minutes, I can see comments on it back on my blog and on the forum on my website. So there's just this sort of much tighter relationship now between the artist and his audience.
And what is that website, just so folks can be a little bit eased into their research?
Yeah, thomasdolby.com.
Very easy.
Very simple. And there's a very thriving community there. And I'd suggest you go and lurk around and see some of the comments that other people are making, both about the live shows and about my new music.
Yeah, I just joined on myself and dropped a quick hello, here I am, and it is a very friendly group. Now, you're not a robot, right?
I'm not a robot.
Okay, you're real. Good.
I'm very fond of robots, but I'm not one.
Have you built a robot yet?
I've never built one. I've always been rather fascinated by them.
Yeah, me too. Especially one that could play music or create music. That would be very intriguing. That's another day. Here's a choice for you, and you could say no to both, I guess. Do you want to chat quickly about the TED conference or Booker T. Boffin?
Well, either one. I mean, just briefly, I was approached in the early 80s by Mutt Lange, the producer, who was working on a Def Leppard album called Pyromania. And I'd worked with Mutt before on Foreigner 4 and a couple of other projects. And he very much wanted me to play with Def Leppard, but I didn't feel it was really my style of music. So I said I'd do it, but I didn't want to be credited as Thomas Dolby. I wanted to be credited as something else. And so Mutt came up with the name Booker T. Boffin. And I have some multi-platinum discs on my wall for both Pyromania and Hysteria, on which I played under that name.
Oh, Hysteria as well. Now, so how did it go after you got done with the experience? Did you think it was, you know, because at first it wasn't your type of music. Did you think, because let me tell you, those Pyromania is a great album.
Yeah, I mean, you know, I'm not so prejudiced that I think that, you know, heavy rock can't be good or you know, soft jazz can't be good. In reality, I'm a bit of a musical snob, and I tend to dislike sort of 90% of everything in a given genre. And then, you know, there's a few things that I'm really into.
Mm-hmm.
I like quirky, eccentric music, really. And, you know, my tastes over the years have tended towards sort of eccentric songwriters ranging from, you know, Dan Hicks to Captain Beefheart to Van Morrison or Joni Mitchell, and these are people that it's very hard to pigeonhole.
Yeah,
and that's sort of the heritage that I have. I think you know, it's easy to sort of pigeonhole my music as electronic, and certainly that was my roots. But I've tried to take the genre a little bit further and bring some humanity to it, and write real songs with meaningful lyrics over some of those electronic sounds.
Yeah, very good. And now, I had an opportunity, and I consider it a great opportunity, to chat with Dan Hicks a little while back, and what a swell guy. And I didn't realize how much into jazz music he really, really, truly is. And he considers himself a very a jazz artist. With the
I
big,
think that probably makes sense.
Yeah. Well, the more I listen, I hear it. But at first, you know, it comes off a little psychobilly almost. But yeah. He was a great person to speak to. I was very happy about that. And now, what about Toby Marks, Banco de Gaia? Is that something you ever toy around with listening to?
Actually, I can't say I've ever heard of him.
Oh, okay. You should check him out. He's a he's an innovative sort of fella as well. Toby Marks, yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, I think you might dig him. He goes under the name Banco de Gaia.
Okay.
And you know, I don't know. I think I'm a music snob as well at times, certainly, but I always try to chuck out a name to everybody that I talk to, just to see what their take on it all is. Maybe it works, maybe it doesn't, but doesn't really hurt to try.
Well, I love to find new music, and obviously, you know, one of the challenges in this day and age where there's, you know, 10,000 things, options for you online and so on, is, you know, finding music. And you know, tastemakers, whether they're DJs or journalists or even somebody that's popular on MySpace, you know, have a lot that they can show us in terms of pointing us towards the right music. And then there's new technologies as well, you know, collaborative filtering and so on, that will help us find, you know, discover music we like. And I think that it's infinitely preferable to having some, you know, middle-aged A&R guy decide for you what you do and don't get to listen to.
Yeah, I completely agree there. So about the Technology Entertainment Design, or the TED Conference, real quick, because it had caught my eye last year, and I had was thinking about, oh, maybe chatting with Mickey Hart about things, and of course that didn't really get me too far. It is an event like no other, isn't it?
Well, the TED Conference is really unique. It happens every year in Monterey, California. And it's a four-day gathering of the brightest minds on the planet, whether they are nuclear physicists or brain surgeons or National Geographic explorers or even ecologists. And you get a rapid fire of about 50 presenters who are allowed only 18 minutes each to talk about what they're most passionate about. And TED is a non-profit organization. It's very expensive to get into, but as a result, it has no real agenda, you know, governmental or corporate. And so people really pour their hearts out. And it's a community that is dedicated to improving life on the planet, with or without the government, in spite of the government in many cases.
Mm-hmm.
And you can see many of the presentations from TED now at www.ted.com. Look for TED Talks. So from last year, we've got people ranging from Al Gore to Tony Robbins, a number of comedians, some great musicians that we've brought in. And I really recommend that you go and check them out online.
I do too, and that is definitely something I want to try to push to people as well. This TED.com is a happening spot, and you got to take the time, you know, devote an hour every now and then to it and really listen to what people are saying.
Yeah, I'm lucky enough to be friendly with the TED curator, Chris Anderson, and so I've been musical director there for the last 5 years.
Yeah.
So that means that I get to create some original music to sort of set the tone for each session.
Good for you.
And I also get to pick the talent of musicians that we bring in, you know, between the speakers after the intense stimulation of all of that energy and intellectual activity. Put on a Scottish folk singer, and it's sort of like aspirin after the migraine.
Do you need an assistant? I mean, honestly, I was working for a company involved in technology research when TED came into my focus. And, of course, there was no synergies there, but it became just something that I would check into every day, and I would spend a little bit of time seeing what people are up to, because I believe that the innovators and the innovation is there. And we just need to all get together and network it, you know, plug it in, if you will. So I'm involved with TED just by clicking on the website. But if you ever see of a way where I could be more helpful, you know, I would love to be a part of that.
Yeah, well, thanks. Well, I'll bear that in mind.
You know, just it is it's something that is that important to me as somebody who enjoys giving back. But I want to thank you for spending time and talking about all these subjects. And I look forward to catching the show.
Well, great. Very nice talking to you, and I'll see you at the Iron Horse.
Yeah, and safe travels until then.
Thanks a lot.
Thank you, Thomas. Have a good day.
Bye-bye.
Bye.